Welcome to another episode of Tirapore, the show that's been proudly bringing you a fan's perspective of all things Sarze Sharks and Sarze Barracuda since 2018. As always, everything heard on this show is 100% my own personal opinion and is not affiliated with either club or the respective leagues. And now it's time for a brand new edition of Tirapore, the podcast made by a fan for the fans. Report season 6, the first show of 2024, which of course officially kicks off my 50th anniversary. Oh my god, I can't believe it. I where has that time gone, my friends? Where has that time gone? I cannot believe this is 15 years since I became a shark. I mean, it literally has just flown by. It really, really has. It's crazy. I think that was 15 years ago. It's like, it just still feels like yesterday, you know? I mean, We've been through a lot, haven't we? We've been through a lot of good, a lot of bad, a lot of ugly. Still here, though. Still here. I can't believe it. I cannot believe that this is my 15th year as a shark. Can't believe it. Really, really cannot believe it. It's just, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, it's flown by. It has, the last 15 years have really just flown by. Anyway, let's not get all set up. So, let me tell you what we've got coming on the show. Obviously, we're going to look back the first month of the year, of the calendar year 2024 for the Sharks, which kind of has been a bit of a rocky road. I feel like we've now reached the point where we've kind of just, you know, accepted our fate, that we're going to be the bottom end of the league. There's no chance of trying to salvage anything from the wreckage. I think we've now reached the point where we have kind of accepted our fate and, you know, we're just going to roll the punches. No, literally, roll with the punches. Because that's how it works in this league. I mean, like December, it was not a bad record. And in fact, it's a lot, when you look at the record from January, it's a lot closer than I think it's been this entire season. I mean, obviously we'll bring up the record at the end of the month, but at the end of the show, we'll of course go through that record, but it actually has been it's probably going to be the best it's been for quite some time. But yet still at the bottom end of the pile. So it's been quite a rocky road to kick off 2024, so I'm going to recap that. Also, we will go to the corner where it's been a very bad month. Very bad month for the Barracuda. Very bad month indeed. Oh dear. Absolutely, really, 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 really bad month. And then, of course, we've got a very eventful, and I do mean very eventful, Westwatch for you. We've got, obviously, the look back on the Kraken hosting their first ever outdoor game and probably giving me my all-time favourite Winter Classic. Anaheim, the recipients of a very controversial trade with the Philadelphia Flyers. More on that later on. And my PTL to Minnesota broke a record attendance in the PTL. Well, they broke a record. Yeah, we'll have that for you as well. So it's going to be quite an impactful month. Let's get going with the first part of this month's lookbacks. Mm. Okay, it's time to begin the first set of lookbacks for 2024. We start the year with some very interesting rematches with Detroit and Winnipeg. Of course, back to last one, we had very two interesting matches against those two sides. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the return fixtures provided. Alexander II, it was Red Wings 5, Sharks 3. Okay, definitely one of the most craziest starts to a calendar year in what is now my 15 years as a Shark. And I kind of had to rewatch Fabian Zetland's goal several times, but still can't work out how that one went in. As both sides really tightened their game after that last meeting, but sadly it ran away from us. The Sharks got their first lead of the game. Detroit equalised really quickly, and after that they never really sort of looked back. So yeah, so really frustrating there, because we had great moments, but just no, alas. January the 4th, a 2-1 regulation win for the Jets. I personally feel this game should have gone past regulation. It really should have gone past regulation. Both teams gave their all in what was a tightly fought contest. There was a lot of those in this month of January. But it was Winnipeg who had to play from behind as Axel Barabanov, halfway into the second, got the scoring started. But the Jets responded less than a minute afterwards, and then early in the third, they got the go-ahead goal, and whilst Mackenzie Blackwood, he kept the Sharks in it, and they just could not find an answer. They just could not find an answer. So I really feel they should have gone past regulation. Both teams deserved something, but alas, yeah. So then we have the first of what felt like a home-on-home series against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So on January the 6th, they came to us, and then on January the 9th, we go to them. So let's see, January the 6th first. 4-1 for the Maple Leafs on turf. Now, they say a goalpost is a netminder's best friend, and it proved to be the case, as that terrible sound rang 7 times! 7! It's not a pretty sound, my friends. They have to hear it once, but 7 times! Oh, Lord, give me a break. Give me a Kit Kat. Especially, they were fast and ferocious with the puck, whilst the Sharks gave nothing. As Martin Jones, he reminded us of why he was once a superstar in Saturday. He only allowed one goal in this game, and that was by Mikael Granlund. I just very quickly want to talk about Martin Jones. I mean, it's quite a sad story, the way obviously his time in San Jose came to an end, because obviously he came to us in 2015-16 from LA. He had a great first year of the Sharks, got us to the Stanley Cup final. We thought we found something in terms of the future of net mining, and then it wasn't until the 1920 season rolled around, and of course Doug Wilson gave Dallas Joe Pavelski on a silver platter. That was where, of course, the wheels fell off, because we had lost a really key piece that would have been able to really keep, that would have been a big impact for us. Our players started, and Martin Jones, he then began to struggle, and then got obviously bought out during the 2020-21 season. It's a horrible way to event for his career. Time is likely to end it, but he has still stuck around the league. Has been Seattle, and now he's in Toronto. So he proved in that game. He kind of reminded us why he was once a superstar in San Jose, but I think it's really sad by the way that was kind of ended. And then the next matchup, he was net for them again. Yeah, and again, only allowed one goal in. So yeah, 7-1 in Toronto on January the 9th. I know this was horrible to watch. I mean, I really don't get the pair here that got handed to Axel Barabanov. I really don't, towards the end of that first period. I mean, that's just siphoned all the hard work that we tried to generate in that period. I mean, it was a stupid penalty. It's not really worth people at all. And Toronto were red hot in that second period. forced Mackenzie Blackwood into the net because he had to come in relief for Kappa Kakanen. But it wasn't all doom and gloom as Henry Front got his first NHL goal. So, whoop, 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 whoop. To go with what he got earlier in the year with the Barracuda. So is he the only player on the Sharks roster this year that's got a goal in both leagues? I think he is. I think he might be. Don't quote me on that. I need to double check that. Don't quote me on that. But I think he might be. he might be. Don't know. Don't quote me on that. I need to double check that. Both teams were... They were very effective on the power play. Though Toronto was the more disciplined of the two teams. Yeah, because a lot of power play teams went to both sides, but Toronto was the more disciplined in this game. Right, so January 11th. Oh, close one here. There's the Canadiens 3-2 regulation for the Sharks, but oh my. This was a huge character victory for the Sharks, who came out swinging, taking control of the game early with goals in the first, coming from Luke Cunningham and Miles star Fabian Zetterlund. He should be going to Toronto, but there again, he would have to have worn one of those ugly kits, and it's kind of a blessing in disguise, but he certainly... is my all-star. He should have been on considered for the rosters. And then the second period, Nikita Okluk nabbed his first as a Shark. Although, while there were plenty of good things from the Sharks this game, Montreal did make things very interesting in the final frame with an extraordinary gamble. And this was extraordinary. 5 minutes to go in regulation, and they, oh, did they risk it for the biscuit. Whoo, they certainly risked it for that digestive. Regardless of if it's milk chocolate or white chocolate, don't care, they went for it. Wow, I don't think I've ever seen that before. A team do, I mean, obviously Minnesota is very, very famous for doing stupid gambles like this. I mean, like, but 5 minutes to go. Wow. Wow, 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 wow. And you know what? It paid off. It actually paid off for them. It was just wow. Yeah, and but because he blocked, he nice to stand tall for Thursday to seal the deal and snap their longest losing streak so far. I say so far because obviously there's still plenty of time left for that to go even bigger. For even bigger one to emerge. So I say so far because who knows? Another left hefty one could be coming its ugly head. January the 13th. No, no, this one stings. Ottawa wins it in regulation by 4. But as the Sharks had just held on for another 5 seconds. 5 seconds. We would have got something here. We would have got something. So this was an extremely messy game of cat and mouse. The Sharks, now I'll let you guys try and work out which one was which, because I can't. The Sharks let the points go begging here against a woeful team in the Atlantic Division, and Ottawa scored first very early and then took control of the game. And whilst the Sharks did get a lead in the second period thanks to veteran Mark Ekblad Vlasic and also Thomas Hertl, it didn't take long for that lead to evaporate as an old theme from last season reared its ugly head once again. And to add insult injuries I've already mentioned, they only had to hold out for 5 more seconds in regulation and they would have been able to come away with some, at least something, rather than nothing they did then go home with. So 5 seconds. All you had to do, 5 seconds. All you had to do was keep control of that puck for 5 seconds and we'd go to overtime. And you know what? The way the Sharks are playing in the extra sessions this year, I'd rather take my chances. But oh no. Oh no. Oh no. Right, and then January the 15th. This for me was the point where I felt we have gone past caring. Frieda with the sabers. Now, thanks to... football going on in Buffalo, this turned into a tea time matchup. Yeah, because originally it was supposed to be 6 o'clock UK time, which I think would have been 1 p.m. in Buffalo. Instead, it got brought forward to 5 o'clock, so tea time here in England, midday in Buffalo. Bloody hell. Whilst your saying goes, no rest for the wicked. But, oh my God. So, yeah, tea time matchup. That's another first. You know, my opinion, I don't like matinee games. No matter what time zone they're in. This, for me, is all confirmation that we are now pretty much officially past caring. We are literally past caring. And you're lucky that our captain made a return this month. Otherwise, this episode would be called Past Caring. There was zero effort in this game. They even gave up a goal on the penalty kill again. And they actually had no excuses for this performance. And I felt our outstanding commentary team summed it up brilliantly. And better than I can. So, you know what? I'm not even going to try. I feel like the commentary team, they summed it up a lot better than I could. So, you know what? I'm not going to try. Just that it was a very dismal, dismal performance. It really, really was. So that concludes the eastern part of the road trip. And of course, when we'll come back, we will finish off that road trip, which of course ended in Chicago. So can we call it a balmy road trip? Can we, maybe? Probably not, because it ended in Chicago, not in the middle of the road trip, so probably not. Anyway, that's what we'll pick it up when we come back. When we do return, we're going to head over to have that very, very exciting West Watch. And a very warm welcome to this month's West Watch. It's your last one for a couple of shows. Next time we'll be recapping the All-Star Weekend Toronto, and the episode after that will be a look at the trade deadline transactions. So the West Watch is going to be away for a while. This is how we're going to do it going forward. We did it last year. That's how we're going to do it going forward. So, yeah, so there's going to be a little break in the episodes covering February, March to cover those big events. Yeah, so the West Watch is going to be going hiatus, but that's how it is going to be as it is going forward. So but we have got some exciting things to cover. For this edition, let's get straight to it. Let's start with my all-time favorite winter classic ever. I feel like I should be doing this as a tier report bid. Do you know what? I'm going to, but I also was going to cover it on West Way. So if people West Way will come up with the game, and then on the tier report bid, I'm going to have Boy with me, and we'll talk about the thoughts as a whole. We could go more time to it. Yes, we'll do that. Seattle, thank you for giving me one of the best winter classics I've ever seen. It's going to be one of my favorite favorites. I mean, I remember last year thinking, why is it going to Seattle? I think we all thought, was it ever be able to host an outdoor game? And I think what's been amazing is you guys proved the doubters wrong. You proved that it is possible to not only do the outdoor games in the West Coast, but it's also possible to do it in a place like Seattle. And of course, T-Mobile Park, I'm very of course familiar with that place. Of course, obviously the home of the Mariners, obviously me being born in Major League Baseball. It's great to see Major League Baseball venues having hosted the last three Winter Classics. That's the last three, so get in there. But that's been great there. It was amazing to see it all. And just to see Seattle really embrace it, that was amazing. That's what you want to see. You want to see the town you want to see the locals embrace it. And Seattle really, really embraced it. And those with the classic jerseys are on fire. We were all hoping you were going to do it. And you did. So thank you for those. They are absolutely gorgeous. Hopefully you'll be wearing those at some point during the rest of the season. Who knows? Hopefully you will. They're absolutely amazing. Love them. And what a game. What a game. The Kraken take it 3-0. Yes. So I was a very, very, very happy person on New Year's Day. Not often can you say that, but still a bit of him in Vancouver, but hey, we'll let it slide. You got them. You got them. Absolutely amazing. The Kraken played a really great, a really solid game. You know, won 3-0. And they really took control of that game for the offset. They were just so dominant. It had that kind of traditional outdoor game start, which is where it's cut, where the tempo is quite slow to begin with, and there's not much action, mainly because both teams are trying to get familiar with the ice. So a lot of the outdoor games, you either the first period, obviously 0-0 or 1-0, you know. But the Kraken, they really just kept full control of the game here. They never once let Vegas get a look in. And Joey Decord, that I had not heard about this until a couple of days after the game. Apparently, Joey Decord recorded the first ever shutout in Winter Classic history. That is impressive. It has happened in the Stadium Series. It has happened. I do know a couple of Stadium Series, but it has happened. It has happened at least once in the Stadium Series. But this had never ever happened before in the Winter Classic. So, how does that feel, Vegas? How's that feel? So yeah, so I didn't know until after the game. So wow, that was just amazing. So great to see the Kraken not only be able to host an outdoor game successfully and beautifully, but also to win your first ever outdoor game. That is just amazing. You join a very, very elite club. Not many teams have won the World Classic. That's because not many teams have been involved in the World Classic. Shame on you, US NHL. Come on, we need more first-time opponents. I don't want to see your Chicago's. I don't want to see your Boston's. I don't want to see your Pittsburgh's. I do not want to see your Rangers. I don't want those teams constantly being chosen to go to the World Classic. I want to see first-time matchups. So I'm really, really glad. Because I think this is the first time since 2020 we have had a first-time matchup. Both teams being in the event bed for the very first time. We haven't had that in 4 years. I want to see more of those matchups. Because everybody wants to be bowled in World Classic. But not everybody's being given the chance. Because the league just keeps bringing up the same old. The Kraken did it brilliantly. They were amazing. And I think the Kraken should be given another outdoor game. Seattle's proven that they can do it. They can do it. So I think maybe give them another outdoor game. Maybe give them a Stadium Series now. We've seen them in World Cup. That's great. But then maybe give them a Stadium Series. And maybe make it me or Vancouver. Who knows? Because I would add, you know, during that list of teams who I said I wouldn't mind going to see in a Stadium Series on their turf during our season 3, yeah. Well, the crack course were around there, so we couldn't add them, but I'm going to add them to that list now because that was amazing. So that was just great, a great game, a really, really great game, great start of the year. We're going to cover more as a whole and chill up a bit. I'm going to boy with me. We'll do it more as a total bit, but just a quick mention in the West Watch for today. Right, from happy tides to controversial tides. And that is this trade by the Philadelphia Flyers getting rid of troublemaker Cutter Gauthier. He has been traded to the Anaheim Ducks for Jamie Drysdale and a second round selection in next year's draft in 2025. This trade sent shockwaves amongst the AHL. Even Brody had to cover it during Sharks intermission in a recent game. Can't remember what it was. But yeah, this sent shockwaves around the AHL. And I think even now we are still feeling the ripple effects of it. Now, some bad news. I did check. The Ducks and Flyers are done for the season. They have played their season series. We're going to have to wait until next year for that to happen. And who knows, he might not even be on the team by then. Who knows? The little twat that he is. I'm so supportive of the Flyers here because I feel like Gauthier clearly is not a nice guy. Clearly he's not. Because this all stemmed from the fact that he didn't want to play for the Philadelphia Flyers. He hasn't played at all. He's not playing with them at all this season. And he hasn't even specified why he didn't want to play with the Flyers at all. He just said, I don't want to play with the Flyers. Just that. Didn't even expand why. Just like, I don't want to play with the Flyers. So he didn't show up training camp. Hasn't played with the Flyers at all this season. And clearly now the Flyers have found the window to basically get shot of him, and well done, Philadelphia. And I have to say, hats off to the Flyers organization here for how they're handling this, because clearly this player is proving to be a little twat. I mean, he's only about what was he? How old is he? Is he 20? Right, he's 21. So he's 21. You're in the biggest professional league, hockey league on the planet. Okay, there's no bigger hockey league than the NHL on the planet right now. Okay, you're one of the biggest hockey leagues on the planet, and you're throwing your weight around, mate. You're 21. You're still a kid. You are still a little kid. You've got lots more growing to do before you can start throwing your weight around in the NHL. You've got a lot more. Yeah. I think it's pathetic. I think he's a little twat, and I'm quite glad he's gone. I'm not happy he's been sent to the Ducks, because the Ducks don't need that drama right now. The Ducks are still in rebuild mode. I mean, I know they thought this year was going to be the breakout year, and I thought it too. I mean, the Ducks had a brilliant start to the season, and then they've now faltered and gone back to bottom of the pile in the Pacific. What happened there, Ducky? What happened? You didn't pick Fantile as the second pick in Nashville. That's what happened. He's not making any progress in Columbus either. No. That's what happened, Wild Wing. You didn't take Fantile. You should have took him. You didn't. You might have a better chance. Anyway. I think he should have gone to maybe somebody who can handle the heat, like maybe Calgary. Maybe went to Calgary. Or stay in the Colin Bratz way. They used to pick up that kind of rubbish. But clearly the Ducks see something in him that the rest of us don't. But I think the Ducks don't need that baggage right now. They really don't. Plus, I've got a soft spot for the Ducks, so I don't want anybody who's going to be a horrible little twat on a great franchise like the Anaheim Ducks. But the Flyers organization, hats off to you guys. I love the way you power this, particularly their coach, John Torreya. The Flyers currently are in a playoff spot. They are in a dogged battle for playoffs, because it is tight in the Metro right now for positions 3 and 4. You've got the Rangers are pretty much locked in first place. So great! Somebody other than Washington's going to win the Metro this year. Woo! Oh no, it's the Rangers. Boo! Good news, bad news there. Good news, somebody other than Washington's going to win the Metropolitan this year. The bad news is, it's the New York Rangers. Why can't it be the Islanders? No, the Rangers are kind of locked in that spot. So but the dogfight is in second, third, and fourth. The Flyers are in the mix. They are in that mix. in the mix, and we could very well see them in the playoffs this year, either as a top three in the Metropolitan or as one of the two Eastern Conference wildcards. They do not need, right at this point right now, when they're in a dogfight for the playoff spots. I know it's still weird in January to say dogfight for playoff spots, but that's how tight that division is right now in that area. That's what the... With the Metropolitan division, the interest is not in who's going to take the division, it's who's in that third place, fourth place spot, and how does it affect playoff picture. That's what the interest is in the Metropolitan division this year. They're in the mix, so they need to do everything they can to get a good position to try and strengthen up their decision. The last bit they need is a little twerp like Gaultier throwing his weight around me. I don't want to play for you. Look at me, I'm 21, I know everything. I'm king of the world. No, you know, your little twerp needs to come back down to earth. Sorry, I've got very strong opinions on this, and it's not my team. Right, I've got really strong opinions on this trade, and I'm not a Flyers fan, I'm a Shark. Okay, I'm not a Philadelphia Flyer, I'm a Shark, but I've got very strong opinions on this trade because I feel this player is just being a little twat. He needs to go back. I don't want to wish this on a Sunday night goals because obviously that's how I'm feeling. He needs to be sent back. He needs to get sent down. He's 21. He's got a lot of time left in his career. Send him back. Send him down to AHL and have him serve time there. And then see if he's ready to then come back at the AHL. Go and check this clip out on YouTube. There's a clip on YouTube where John Troilo just slaughters a reporter. Because a reporter had been saying about, Kevin Hayes, and he influenced this little bit. And John Troilo took real, you go coach, go for it. And he had it easy because the silly little reporter admitted he did it. Because it was brilliant how John Troilo caught the reporter out. He went, so who wrote that? Is he here? Are they here? Are they here? Are they here? And you hear a sheepish, me! I wrote it! They just eyes and just fix that report. You're not a nice guy. You're a bad man. How dare you write that? Kevin Hayes is a good man. He's a good man. Do you know anything you've done to that man now? He's gonna have to carry that with him the rest of his life. How dare you? They went to the reporter. Sorry, what was your question? I was like, wow! Go, John Troilo. That is the kind of guy I want the Sharks roster right now. That is the kind of guy I want coaching the Saturday Sharks. Because that is a coach that is going to bat for my team. John Troilo has proven that he is a guy that is going to stick up for his players. He's not going to trash them. He's not going to slate them. He's not going to nitpick everything they do on the ice, unlike somebody. David Quinn! Okay. John Troilo is going to stand up for his teammates, and he's going to mate no matter what. John Troilo is the kind of guy I want coaching my Sharks right now. Get David Quinn shot. And bring somebody like John Troilo in. Okay? Bring someone like that in. Because that is the kind of guy I want coaching my Sharks. I do not want somebody to just go nitpicking them, have a go at them, when all they just do is stand on a bench game in, game out, and just do nothing. I don't want that. I want somebody who's going to go in there and back my team, defend my players through thick and thin. So John Troilo, hats off. I didn't really know what to make him before, but after that, Because before then, he was in Columbus, wasn't he? So he didn't really have much to do. So he didn't have much to work with. Then he's now moved to the Flyers. And he's now got a real opportunity to make a go in the AHL. So that is well done here. That's how I want on my team. No. But yeah, it's a trade that has shocked the world. It has shocked the league. It's still causing ripple effects. And I completely defend the Flyers here. I think Gautier needs a taste of his own medicine. He needs to be put in his place. Someone needs to put that boy in his place because he's a little boy. He's a little boy. Oh my God. Right, let's finish up with something nice. Away from the NHL. Let's go to PWHL Minnesota. As I mentioned, our inaugural season is off and running. We are going to mention this in Purple Rain, by our sister show, but I want to mention it here on Triple as well, because it's an amazing thing that happened. And that is, the PWHL had broke the women's hockey attendance record twice its first week alone. Yep, yeah, that's right. Not once, but twice that record got broken. Oh, yeah. It's just amazing to see that this league has really taken off. It really has. I'm so happy for it. I'm so excited to be involved, and I can't wait to share that with you all on our sister show, which of course is now up and running. We are underway now, guys. So just wow. So the record first got broken during the league's second game, when PHL Ottawa capped off an incredible night for women's sports. They set a new attendance record of 8,318 at TD Place Arena. I think the previous record was somewhere in the region of 7,000. That's what the previous record was, so Ottawa broke that. However, they didn't get to celebrate that for too long. Oh, no. I do kind of feel for PUH Ottawa here, but at the same time, it was my team that then took it for them, so I'm kind of sad, but not sad for you. Because 5 days later, your PUH Minnesota staged its home opener on January the 6th and shattered that mark by drawing in 13,316 fans in XLRT Centre to witness a 3-0 shutout victory of a PWHL Montreal. Now, for comparison, that's more than the 2023 average attendance of some NHL teams, including the Winnipeg Jets. Oh yeah. Now, of course, you can argue, of course, obviously, it's different to a scale. I mean, if we look at the two barns, which I will do, PWHL Ottawa are playing in a small venue, like a lot of these teams are. PWHL Ottawa are playing in... PWHL Ottawa plays in the TD Palace Arena, which could only hold 8,500. Compare that to our PWHL Minnesota, who are the only PWHL team to play all its games, or its home games, I should say, in an NHL bar. We are playing all our games at XLRT Los Minnesota. Now, of course, that arena can hold up to well over 17. Roughly 17,000. 17,954 is the exact capacity. So obviously, we were more likely to break that because obviously we're at our bar, or was it a small venue? But that record could easily get taken from us because obviously PSL New York, for a couple of their games, PHL New York are splitting their games across three venues this year. They are playing in the Total Mortgage Arena, in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which can hold 8,412 supporters. And some of their games will also be played at the Islanders Bar at UBS Arena. That can hold 70,055. It's select games though, so who knows? There could be actually in the season for New York to take that from us. But for now, that record is solely Minnesota's. I'm so proud. It's my PHL team that gets to hold that record. I'm so proud of them. Just amazing. Yeah, just absolutely amazing. I cannot tell you how ecstatic we are about this. We are just absolutely just so excited, and we just literally have to praise the fans, you know, for their dedication there. Now, of course, in the state of hockey, you kind of knew they were going to show up, but they took it to a whole new level, and it was just amazing. It's just to see that, and to see that this league really take off, because a lot of people say, oh, it's never going to work, you'll probably get like maybe 6 months, and yet here we are. People have taken this literally to heart. They have literally got on board. The fans are loving it. They are literally loving the Peter Hill. So all you doubters, we have proved you wrong in the space of the first week alone. We did it. We showed you, look, there's interest in this league. It's going to grow and grow and grow. We're here now, and we're here to stay. So it's just absolutely amazing. It's just amazing. It's just great to see that, you know. Just so really grateful for women's hockey, because this is just such an amazing moment. I'm going to talk more about our sister show, because that is where this was. But I wanted to quickly mention this on Tier Box Sport. Be a great thing to do as a Westwatch segment, because obviously I think with Westwatch I'm going to expand it to PWHL and AHL as well. So yeah, and of course currently we are the only Western team in the PHL, so we can feature Minnesota quite as fast as we like. But of course, it also connects my two teams together, doesn't it? The Sharks and Peanut on Minnesota. So there you go. But that's just absolutely amazing. So sorry, Ottawa, but not sorry, because yeah, I mean, it wasn't good. I lost. In fact, I'll just yeah, Ottawa's bar is the biggest of the small rigs. And of course, we've got the biggest of the whole of the big rigs. Only about a couple hundred though. Only about 700 though, but it's different. But yeah. Hopefully, that record will stay in Minnesota. But I do know that Peter Shaw, New York have got a couple of games in UBS Arena, and we will be in there as well. What sort of season? So who knows? That record might go from us, but we'll see. We'll see. But for now, just great for women's hockey, but also great, great for Minnesota. And that's going to conclude it for the Westwatch for the next two shows. Like I say, it's going to be a little break for now, because as I said, next show we will be recapping the All-Star Weekend at Burger King. You have to go look at the jersey to get that reference. We really do. Well, maybe we can get a show sponsored by Burger King. Who knows? If you're listening, become a sponsor us. We'll give you a nice shout out on the show for free stuff, you know? Right. So that's going to be the next one. Then, of course, the one after that, obviously, we're going to recap all the transactions made during the trade deadline. So, yeah, so the Westwatch will return later in the season. For now, that's going to conclude business on this edition of Westwatch. Alright, it's now time to head on over to Cuda Corner, and not a great month for Barracuda this month. No, not great. We saw the rain a lot this month. Woo, 3 in a row against Ontario. And another bizarre home series with Bakersfield. I don't know what's up with the Condors and the way they do their back-to-backs. Anyway, we'll get started. Joey the Third, a 6-4 victory over the Roadrunners. So the Barracuda notched 6 goals on Wednesday night at Texas Arena, including 2 from Daniel Gulston en route to a 6-4 win over Tucson. That victory was the Barracuda's first in 4 attempts against the Coyotes affiliates. And it's now Tucson's 5-game winning streak. The Roadrunners are having a very impressive year this season. Gulston, who led the team with 8 shots, opened the scoring in the first before potting the game winner in the third on the power play. Nathan Todd also finished the game with 3 points, and Cole Castles, Scott Severin, Shakir Mokhtarmilan, Kyle Rowe, and Leon Gwarki registered multiple points. In the first at 4:10, Gustin opened the scoring as he drove the net and cleared up a roll shot that had been denied by Matt Belletta. Later in the period at 12:18, Gwarkey hit the post and Trott guided in the rebound to make it 2-0. After the Barracuda were called for their first Meyer penalty of the night, Austin Bosnowski cut the lead back down to 1 at 17:44. Later in the period, Castles made it 3-1 Barracuda before Josh Dorm answered back at just 22 seconds later. In the second, the Barracuda outshot Tucson 15-9, but Cam Crotty was able to tie the score at 18:15, his first goal in 89 games. In the third, Barracuda recaptured its lead as Sarin tipped in a McDermott point shot just 1 minute into the frame on the power play, but the Rovers would tie the score when Victor Soderstrom threaded a point shot through Magnus Krona's five hole. At 17:18, the Barracuda would find a way to go back up by 1 when Gushnin at one time a Castle speed to make it 5-4, and Artin Gura sealed it with an empty netter at 19:17, his first pro tally. So, great way to start the new year then. And then we have the first of 3 games against Ontario. 2 at the Reign and then 1 in Albarn. So January the 5th and 6th was a back-to-back in Ontario, and on January 9th the Reign would come up to see us. So we'll begin and we begin with January the 5th, which saw the Reign shut out the Barracuda 2-0. Oh yeah, very dismal. Not great, but close. They were in it, just couldn't find a way to get on the score sheet. So the Barracuda put 25 shots on net on Friday night at the Toyota Arena, but failed to beat rookie goaltender. Oh, it makes it even more worse. It was a rookie, Eric Portillo, and were shut out 2-0 by the Ontario Reign. That loss is the team's third of the year and first since November 24 when they were defeated 3-0 by the Reign. After a scoreless first, Ontario broke the ice on its third power play of the night. Achille Thomas steered in a fortuitous bounce that landed just above the crease, right an 8 seconds into the advantage. Later in the period, the Reign would extend the lead at 19:41 when Taylor Ward snapped in a breakaway while short-handed. In the third, the Barracuda would outshot the Reign 11-6, but failed to score and would end up falling 2-0. 24 hours later, it was a different story, but same net result, a loss. We fell in overtime 5-4. They scored a season-high 4 goals throughout the third period outside at Toyota Arena in Ontario, but would eventually fall 5-4 in overtime to Ontario Reign as Sam Fuegemeier completed a hat-trick in the extra session. In that loss, Scott Severin notched his third career 2-goal game, and the Barracuda also got tallies from defenseman Radim Šimek and Shakina McDermott. In the first of the game's first shot, Fuegemeier beat Magnus Krona, glove side, to give the Reign a 1-0 lead. They would then extend that in after a neutral zone giveaway by the Barracuda led to Sam Helleros snapping in Ontario's second goal of the game in, at 15:54. In the second, the Reign would go up 3-0 on the power play as Akil Thomas steered in a rebound from just above the crease. In the final period, it was all Barracuda. They break through as Šimek slung in a point shot with a second remaining on the team's first power play. Magina pushed Ontario's lead back to 3, but a minute 6 seconds later, Ethan Frisch would fire McDermott parked in front of the net, cutting it back to 2. At 50:44, Severin would inch the Barracuda winning the goal as he tipped in a Nathan Todd shot, and then 2:01 later, Severin would tie the score at 4-4. In overtime, the Barracuda were outshot 4-0, and as they began on the penalty kill, and Fernandina would win it at 2:17 as the game got back to full strength. So the third and final meeting in a row held attacked Jamie and I, this time Arbonne, and unfortunately the rain would take all three games. They automatically fell behind 3-0 to 40 Mins on Tuesday night Texas Arena, and couldn't recover, falling 4-1 to Ontario. In the loss, Daniel Gauthier scored his team leading 12th goal of the year, and the first Sam Fagnino tipped in the game's first goal as he carried the puck around down the left wing at 4:05. In the second, Charles Hudson drew a penalty and fired in a power play goal to make it 2-0 at 2:25. Akil Thomas then made it 3-0 as he forced the Barracuda turnover while short-handed and worked around Eaton and McNulty just above at the goal line. In the third, Dama 3, Gushin snapped in Jack's Nuneker drop pass at 12:07 to give some hope, but Fagnino sealed the deal with Antinetta at 19:08. Eric Portillo made 56 saves to improve to 3-0 against Vancouver this season. Right, so finally we get to move away from the rain. About time. And we would next then see... Okay, the Condors in this bizarre home-home back-to-back series. It's so bizarre the way Bakersfield does back-to-backs. Never in the same building. It's always used to be in your barn one night after next. Anyway, it was a 3-2-2. Oh yeah, both games had the same scoreline. 3-2. So, January 12, 3-2, loss at Texas U Arena. They gave up 3 unanswered goals on Friday at Texas U Arena, Barracuda, and despite cutting the deficit down late, fell 3-2 to Bakersfield. In that loss, Ethan Card, well, became the second player on the Barracuda to reach double-digit goals when he lit the lamp in the opening 20 mins, snapping a 6-game goalless drought. Nathan Todd also finished with his 6th multi-point game of the year. In the first Barracuda over the scoring, as Kyle Ross spotted Cartwell in front of the net from below the goal line, and the rookie forward fired a shot under the arm of Condors goalie Olivier Rodrigue. The assist for Ross was the 299th point in the AHL. In the second, after the Barracuda took their first penalty, Seth Griffin snapped in the tying goal just 40 seconds into the man advantage from between the circles at 7:47. Tied 1-1 the third, the Condors took their first lead of the night with when Ben Gleason extended his goal streak to 4 games while shorthanded, and then Dylan Holloway notched a goal at 3:15 on the power play. With the extra attacker on top, managed to bat the Barracuda's second goal, but too little too late as it came with 37 seconds remaining in the game. So 24 hours later, different barn, same outcome, 3-2 Condors. Okay, the Barracuda scored twice the third period of Saturday at the Mechanics Bank Arena, but failed to dig out the 3-0 hole, falling 3-2 to Bakersfield. In the loss, Daniel Gushlin became the first player on the Barracuda to reach 30 points as he notched his TDD 13th goal of the year. Leon Gwaki also scored his 8th goal of the season and is now tied 4th amongst lead defenders in tallies. In the first, the Condors would jump out to a 1-0 lead on their second shot of the game. Alex Pettis backhanded in a loose puck from above the crease at 5:44. Later appearing on its first power play, the Condors would extend the lead as Rafael Lovani blasted a slap shot past Magnus Crudder at 4:27. The Condors will extend their lead late in the second at 7:51 as Ben Reason ripped in a point shot past a screen corner. After a late second period penalty was called against the Condors, Gushnin would get the Barracuda on the board at 1:38 of the third as he punched a one-timer from Ethan Carbon. At 13:38, the Barracuda was an inch within the goal when Gwaki rifled a point shot past Jack Campbell to make it 3-2. Despite the Condors taking a penalty with 1:06 remaining in the regulation, the Barracuda failed to tie the score and would fall in their 5th consecutive game. We move on to another back to back. So again, another month of heavy back to backs. We have one against the Reign, that's one against the Condors, and then but there is more breathing space than compared to December. My argument was there wasn't enough breathing space between games. Here, there is definitely some breathing space. We'll move on. January 16th, and we go to Charlotte for the first time since our inaugural season. It's been so great to have a season series against Charlotte this year. It really has. I always put there all for me. Charlotte, the Checkers, always my picks to do very well in the Eastern Conference. So it's great to actually have the opportunity to get to see them this year. Hopefully we can have more matchups with them going forward. But yeah, so we make our first trip to Charlotte for the first time in a long while, and it was an overtime loss, I'm afraid. The Barracuda erased a 2-goal deficit on Tuesday at the Moyes Coliseum, but ultimately fall 5-4 in overtime to the Checkers. In the loss, Oscar Lindblom scored twice, and Tristan Robbins notched his first goal of the year. 1:29 into the first, Mackie Savlich ripped in the opening goal of the game as the Checkers struck on their second shot. 46 seconds later, Santino Cornum ended Ian McNeese's night at 2-0. Charlotte just 12:15 into the game. On the following shot, Robbins cut that deficit to 1 when he beat Ludwig Leber on the stick side. Later in the period, on Charlotte's second power play, Wiemler, Schuller, kicked in a point shot to make it 3-1 Checkers. Just 46 seconds into the second period, Lindblom tipped in a Leon Gwaki shot to make it 3-2 on the power play. But 12:29, Justin Sordenif answered with a power play goal of his own for the Checkers to push them back to 2. Even Caldwell one-timed a shot in off the face-off, and then Tanner Kaspik stole a puck from Wibbert from behind the net and sent it to Lindblom, who guided the puck into an open net to tie the game at 4-4. In the third, the Checkers replaced Wibbert with Spencer Knight in the net. And outshot the Barracuda at 10-6 in the frame. Marcus Krona made multiple point blank saves to get the game to overtime. And in overtime, Sulev would seal the deal as he sniped the winning goal with the game winner upstairs at 2:34. The next night, 24 hours later, a more dominant display from the Checkers as they won 4-1. The Barracuda managed to score just 1 goal on Wednesday night at the Royals Coliseum, and despite keeping it close all game, fell 4-1 to the Checkers. After the scores first, the Checkers managed to open the scoring at free play on a Patrick Giles deflection. 1:22 later, the Checkers would score again when Santia Kanunen ripped in a shot over the blocks of Magnus Krona, front the high slot. The Barracuda would respond at 9:33 when Tristan Robbins fired in his second goal in as many games from the left dot. In the third, with 2 minutes and 50 seconds remaining, the Checkers managed to extend the lead when Wheeler at school lifted a rebound over the tight right pass and the Krona from in tight. The Checkers sealed the win at 9-1 on the Lucas Carlson and Netta. So I believe that's a dominant display from the Checkers in the regular season series. Did we get any wins against them? We lost both in Charlotte this month. So when did we see the Checkers? Was it in the middle of December? Bear with me 1 second while I look this up. Okay, I think it was November. There we go, so that's episode 3. So the Checkers won 3 of the 4 contests we've seen this year. the Barracuda did win. That was on November the 12th, 5-1. Okay, so yeah, like I say, it's great to see the Shark Checkers this season. Of course, wish you all the very best going forward. Like I said, it was one of my top picks to do very well in the East, so I wish them all the best and hope we'll see you again real soon. Back to the division now, and a back-to-back with the Eagles, first on January the 20th, which was an overtime loss by the score of 5-6. The Barracuda held multiple leads though at the Blue Arena, but ultimately would fall in overtime 6-5 to the Eagles, with the Los Angeles now over 7 in overtime this season and has dropped 8 in a row. Unfortunately, the losing streak would get worse before it got better, my friends. By defeat, Vasily Pulley scored twice, and Nikolai Knezov, Radim Shemek, Tristan Robbins, and Daniel Gushdin all recorded multiple points. The Barracuda would get on the board in the first at 5:27 and take a 1-0 lead when Gushdin shoveled what looked like an extended backhand pass to the net, and it skittered through Eagles net minor Trent Reiner. But 31 seconds later, Matt Steinberg would level the score as he tipped in a Keaton Middleton point shot. After Artem Gura was called for cross-checking, the Eagles would take their first lead as Cedric Parry tipped in an Ivan pull of the trigger at 13:20-32. In the second, Brad Hunt, what an unfortunate surname! May it be an answer! Sorry. Sorry, it's an unfortunate surname to have. Especially in this kind of industry. Okay, compose. He made it 3-0 as he beat Madness Krona on a 2-on-1 to give the Eagles a 3-1 lead with little momentum in their favour. The Barracuda would cut that down to 1 when Robbins ripped in his third goal in as many nights at 8:27 after a bad chase by the Eagles. Less than 2 minutes later, at 10:21, Oscar Lindblom poked in a loose puck that was sitting in the crease after a Miner had made the initial save on Jacob Pettersson's rip from the right wing. 40 seconds later, the Barracuda would go up 4-3 and end in this night as Gushin found Perule from below the goal line as the blue line drifted to the low slot from the point. Up 4-3, going to the third, the Barracuda would replace Krona with Jorge Romanov. Not sure if that was a good idea, but hey ho. After Krona was injured, right, fair dues. It would have made sense if I carried on reading the article. Right, that's me talk. So he was injured, right, so fair dues. The rookie netminder would allow goals on the first two shots he faced as the Eagles went back up by 1. First, Hunt, would blast a shot down Romanov's shoulder from the point just 3 seconds into the Eagles' power play, and then Ben Myers would beat Romanov lopside at 7:46. Down 5-4 late in the third, but I could just find a way to tie the score when he did not spot a pull in coming down from the point, and he fired in the equaliser at 8:15. After no more scoring in regulation, we go to overtime. On the only shot of the game, the Eagles would secure the win as Oscar Lawson busted down the left wing and went top shelf at 1:29, so ending very early. 24 hours later, and it was a 6-4 scoreline that the Barracuda would fall to make that losing streak 9 in a row. Not good, kiddies, it's not good. But the Barracuda did have much of a lead on Sunday afternoon at the Blue Arena, and then later erased a 2-goal deficit before ultimately falling 6-4 to the Colorado Eagles. On the first shot of the game, Ethan Carbot opened the scoring at 1:06 as he fired in a pass from Nathan Todd, who had stolen at the park from Eagles netminder Justin Anulun. That's an unfortunate surname! Oh, God. On the end wall! 39 seconds later, Jason Pullen would tie it up with his first in the AHL. 28 seconds after that, Ben Myers ripped in the go-ahead at goal on Colorado's second shot, ending Geordie Roanoke's event inning just 2:13 into the contest. After Barracuda were called for their first Meyer, the Eagles would extend that lead on the goal by Ivan. Oh, that is his name. It's 53. Oh my. In the second, the Barracuda would cut the lead back down to 1 as Tanner Caspic worked around Adam. It's like the whole Uranus thing. Oh my god. Just above the crease and back kind of. I hope you're not giggling at home, my friends. I hope you're not giggling. It's not funny. He can't help what his family name is, okay? He can't help it. Alright? Men are stuck with that, okay? We're stuck with our surnames, whereas women, you get the beauty to change yours. We don't. We have to be stuck with ours. So he can't. So I hope there's nobody giggling at home right now, okay? Because it's not his fault. Anyway, it was from just above the crease, and that sounds wrong as well. Backhand did his first goal in 20 games. The 13:59, Carroll snapped in a rebound off a point shot from Gora to tie the score at 3-3. 89 seconds later, after the Barracuda had tied it, Oscar Orlem, who scored the overtime winner the previous night, would score to put the Eagles back on top 4-3. In the third, Colorado extends that advantage as Riley Tuffey banked in a rebound at 6:47. Then Spencer Smallman notched hit an empty netter at 16:38. Brad Merrick would cut the lead back down to 2 at 18:44, but too little too late. Right, we can move away from the Eagles and the Anon. Thank you. Come on now. It's supposed to be a serious show. Right. One lone visit from the Condors. And this. So, no weird back-to-back slide. Just one pit stop for them. Jammy 24. And the streak by Lienz. We win the game 5-3. Hallelujah. Ooh. And Steel! Yes! Which is slowly becoming my new favourite. I know! What's happened? Last season it was ice. And now this season, it's changed from steel. Oh my god. I just feel that each season I'm going to have a new favourite. I really am. So who knows? Next year it'll probably be blackout. But I've just loved steel with jerseys. They really are. Barracuda returned to Taxi Arena on Wednesday night and snapped the 9-game skid by upending Bakersfield 5-3. In the victory, 7 different Barracuda players finished with multiple points, including Daniel Gushton, setting his point streak to 6, and now leads the team with 14 goals, 23 assists, and 37 points. After giving up a pair of goals in the first, the Barracuda would go on a 5-on-3 power play in the second, and while on the 2-man advantage, Carl Castles managed to poke in a loose puck that had bounced off the post to make it 2-1. 59 seconds later, Gushnier ripped in the tying goal on the short side at 10:14. Scott Severin swiped in a rebound from in tight to give the Barracuda their first lead. In the third, up 3-2, Oscar Lindblom drove the net and potted his fourth that goal in his last 5 games, giving the Cuda a 2-goal advantage after Matthew Butrup had cut the lead down to 1 at 15:18. Jacks Kuznicka sealed the win with an empty netter at 19:20. Eton McNally, who allowed a pair of goals on 12 shots in the first, would turn aside 25 the next 26. He sought to pick up his fifth win of the year. Vancouver finished the game going 2-2 on the power play and 3-3 on the penalty kill. So special teams have been a really great play here. And then we finish off the month against the Wranglers. Then one night in steel and then one night in pink. So more on that in a moment. Right, January 26th, shootout win over the Wranglers. That's another home win over Calgary. Yes, they're coming in thick and fast. The Vikings have got 37 stops from Eton Markley showing up the Calgary Wranglers. 3-0 on Saturday night at Texas Arena. The win was the Vancouver's 4th straight against the Wranglers. It's really impressive though. I mean, we're really now starting to find a rhythm against Calgary. I mean, last year it's fair to say we didn't do that great against the Wranglers last year. I can't remember how the season went. We may have got more than that, but I don't know. I can't remember that much. We really did struggle against the Wranglers last year. They really made a dominant first year in the AHL in Calgary. So this year it's now 5 hours to get wins over them in both our barn and in theirs. It's just great. I still think the Wranglers are probably the ones to beat in the Pacific Division this year. And that's no disrespect to Coachella, but I think the Wranglers are more better matched to win the division. Whereas the Firebirds are more suited for playoff hockey. There. But yeah, so great to now with Firebirds to get these wins over the Wranglers because they are a tough side to beat. So when they come, you can't get the most of them. So let's see how they did, shall we? So after a scoreless burst, Ethan Frisch worked up to the right slot dot and ripped a shot over the left shoulder of Dustin Wolf at 13:54 for his burst in his pro career, giving the Barracuda a 1-0 lead after Scott Severin drew a penalty. Nathan Todd fired a one-timer under the Wolf's left arm from the left wing at 17:18 to give Sarze a 2-0 lead. And then in the third, the Barracuda extended their advantage when Jordi Verlet backhanded in a loose puck from in right during a delay penalty for his burst in a cooler jersey. Wranglers would pull Wolf in over 6 minutes and 30 seconds to... Oh! A bigger gamble than Montreal did! Wow! Wow, okay. How he didn't get empty netter, I don't know. Wow! And he even had a power play. Oh, wow. But McNally, he turned aside all 11 shots he faced on that's his second shutout of the year and second against Calgary. Absolutely amazing. So then the next day, January 27th, and we get to put the National Hockey League to shame because it was special jersey night. Pink at the rink night. I absolutely loved these. I thought these were absolutely gorgeous. And pink's not my colour. You would not catch me wearing pink. But then again, you probably wouldn't have catch me wearing purple before Peter Mitchell, Minnesota. So let's not actually go that fast. But I think it's a real shame. And I think it's very disgusting that the AHL has banned special night jerseys. It really is disgusting. So it's great to see the AHL puts the National Hockey League to shame. As Barracuda donned the pink jerseys, the pink at the ring night, showing that they want to fight against cancer, even if the National Hockey League don't want to. But anyway, sadly though, the Wranglers fought back, winning 3-2. The Barracuda lost their lead after giving up a pair of second period got power play goals and failed to tie it after that point, falling 3-2 to the Wranglers on Saturday at Texas Arena in front of 3,682 fans. In the first, the Wranglers broke the ice as Ida Sorlov's point shot went off a Barracuda defender and in at 2:28. 47 seconds later, Jacob Pedersen carried the puck down the left wing on a partial breakaway and ripped in a 5-hole top side 1-1 for his first of his last 18. Pearson carried the puck down the left wing on a partial breakaway and ripped in a 5-hole shot to tie it at 1-1 for his first in his last 18. As I just mentioned, up at 8:34. His first goal back after 11 game absence. That's what I should have then said. So apologies for the repeat there. Thomas, it's a long segment as always, but we're nearly there. Thomas Bordeleau received a pass from Cole Castles, who won on a puck battle on a forecheck at the end wall and ripped in the go ahead goal to make it 2-1 Barracuda. And in the second, the Cougar took 4 separate penalties, giving up goals on the first two. First, Brady Lyle was snapping a right point rip, and then during a delay penalty, Jonathan Astrola wired in a pull off the trigger from the high slot at 9:49. In the final 20, the Barracuda would twice go on the power play and outshot Calgary 8-3, but failed to tie the score. So, sadly, a sad end to the month. It has been a really struggle for the Barracuda. Losing 9 in a row, not great. Bear in mind, they had to deal with travel, because obviously Charlotte's not in our time zone. So, there's that to take into account as well. That, I think, is the last of the hefty travel for the Barracuda season. I'll have to double check that. But yeah, we have lost serious ground. It's not been a kind month, January. It's not been great, but there's still a lot still to come. But yeah, but not a great addition to Cougar Corner. Not great for them at all. It was a poor way to start 2024. Warm welcome back to the look backs as we continue to look back on the month of January. And this second half of the month was very, very crucial for one big thing. The cap is back. Finally, our captain returned to the fold, and you saw what a difference it made in the second half of January. So let's look over it, shall we? So here on January the 16th, we conclude the road trip. It's not really a balmy road trip, because obviously Chicago is the end of a road trip, not in the middle. So, but still weird how dominantly it was an Atlantic Division road trip, and then you have a final pit stop in Chicago. Anyway, shootout loss 2-1 to Chicago. Although, giving up a goal on the penalty kill once again really siphoned the momentum of the Sharks. Hard work. I thought they were doing really great to start the period, and that penny kill, that goal, it just cycled up. However, despite the scrapping that went down in this match, I was impressed with the effort here. Particularly in that second period, which gave them the opportunity to get back in the game. Which they did, thanks to Ryan Carpenter. And actually, the Sharks really did look like the better team here. They really looked like the better team. But once again, they faltered in the shootout, which kind of felt a bit like a baseball match. It literally went 9 innings. It went to a 9-round shootout. So it kind of felt like a baseball match. Kind of felt like a Phillies-Cubs game. It went 9 rounds. And unfortunately, Chicago got the extra point there. But great to see the effort there in this game. Really great to see the effort was there. Okay, on January the 20th, the moment you've all been waiting for, the captain returned in a 5-3 win over the Ducks. He made his long-awaited return, and he made quite the impact on the tour. He assisted on Mark Edward Blasic's goal, but the Ducks, though, they did not make things easy this game. They really did not make it easy. But I just love Saturday's response to what some may say was a controversial moment in the game when the Ducks got that goal. a really great work on NBC Sports California to be able to show the overhead angle, because you could look, because it was quite a controversial moment in the game. And if this had been a loss, then I think we always could have argued that was what cost the Sharks. But at the end of the day, we got to see the overhead angle. And I, if you really, from that angle, you could not tell. Even though the with the net, the overhead angle probably is the best angle you're going to get, it still was not clear as to whether the puck had actually properly crossed the line or not. And I think with a call like that, you could make the case for it going either way. So being a goal for the Ducks or being a no goal, you could make a call either way. So you really had to really go on what the situation room had to say and just call it a day. Because they are going to have the best because I mean, the situation really, they can see all the angles and that we could get, and they would have looked at every single angle that was available to them, and they would have been able to make the judgment that was right call. And at the end of the day, they did at the end awarded the goal, even though when you look at the camera angle, we still can't tell how that puck actually crossed the line. It did go across the line. It was a very bizarre sequence, but it was a goal for the Ducks. But I loved how the Sharks responded to that. She got two Sharks, Kyle Burrows and Jan Rudder, getting their first goals in Teal. While Thomas Hill, he had a really brilliant lacrosse style empty air to really seal the deal. So great to see how the Sharks were actually responded to a controversial moment like that. That could really put a lot of teams off, but not the Sharks. They got their heads back in it, they got focused, and they came away with the win. Really, really, really great work. And great to see Luka Couture finally back in action. We've missed your cap, and we're glad to have you back. Okay, January the 22nd, we go to see our other SoCal rivals. A shootout win, finally! The Monkey! Off the back, I thought it was never going to happen. We finally win a shootout 4-3, but really, it shouldn't need to have gone to that. Since this was a game where both sides were chasing the momentum here. And so, Fabian Sutton's goal took the Kings by surprise. It really did. It was a brilliant piece of football display on what was a delayed penalty. The Sharks, they really took control of this game, and they looked dominant. So it's kind of tough, you know, to see them obviously, you know, allow the Kings to get a way back into the game. It was very late in the second period. They took advantage, and then they took advantage of the third period. Yet Justin Bailey, he did put us back on top. They just couldn't grab an insurance mark, and it would have helped to steal a deal, and the game would go beyond regulation. But Luka Couture and Peterson, they struck the shootout, and thanks to Kaapo Kähkönen standing tall, we didn't need to go to the third round. Yes. Oh yeah, we got it done in the two rounds. That really worked. And then January the 23rd. So again this season we have a back to back situation. We're in LA one night, then back home the next. And what a pollinator. Welcome to January 23rd, the Rangers, who was already in San Jose. We were playing in LA, but we got the overtime win 3-2. Oh my, what pandemonium we saw at the Tanque. The Sharks pulled off an almighty comeback. Going into that second period, they were literally down and out. They literally were going to that second intermission. They were down and out. But in the third, they got that early marker, thanks to Nico Sturm, who is still finding his feet now after coming back from surgery. And then 2 minutes later, you get Ryan Carpenter, who gets the equaliser. But it was the veteran Tomas Hertl who just lifted the roof of the building. As I say, denied the Rangers the California sweep. Oh yeah, because they had won in LA, they had won in Anaheim. They just had left us to go. And we did not let that happen. Oh yeah, North Cal stands strong against a real big contender for the Cup. I mean, the Rangers are still up there as contenders. I mean, they're sort of faltering in terms of the other division leaders, but I think they're still up there. So great to deny a cup contender two massive big points left. So really, really great work. So then January the 27th, the Sabres come in town. Pride night. I just want to start very quickly. I want to start by saying that I appreciated the players that were brave and bold and put the tape on their sticks. I want to say a massive thank you to those guys. I really appreciate it. And also especially massive thank you to SJ Sharkey, because I noticed that he was wearing a Pride jersey. So thank you very much. I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. So thank you to you brave players who just stuck it to the man, and you put the stick, the tape on your stick. And also thank you to Sharky as well for wearing the Pride jersey. Yeah, so thank you to those who did chose to stick it to the man and stand with us. Thank you. On to the game itself though. Now to start with, it was very evenly matched. It was a quite evenly matched contest to begin with. The Sharks, they had a great first period. They were tenacious and aggressive. Their goals scored by Mark Blasic and Jan Rutter came from 2 minutes apart from each other. But sadly, Buffalo, they turned up the offensive though, and they scored 5 unanswered goals despite an evenly matched pace between the two sides in terms of shots on goal, face-offs and permits. You know, I felt this was a really more a close encounter than what we saw. But the Sharks were just lacking in scoring opportunities in a game where they showed great promise to the score of the Reeds, because it was a lot more tighter and a lot more competitive than what we saw in Buffalo just a couple of nights ago. It was a tea time matchup. So, yeah, real shame. Real shame. Okay, they are jamming the 30th, the Kraken in town. They're in a precarious position right now in Seattle. They're on the borderline, but just not there yet in terms of player position. So, being shut out 2-0 by us probably didn't help their chances. This was an extremely tight and well-fought contest. I don't think the Kraken were expecting us to bring the heat, especially as given the last time these two sides met, it was a 7-1 thrashing. The Kraken was released on that night. It was not great for the show, for Teal Town. But bring it we did. Mackenzie Blackwood, he stood tall, stopping all 32 shots he faced by Seattle. He got great support from his teammates. Marco Blasic kicked on the scoring. It was a great display of with the way his teammates just set up the play for him to again capitalise on the goal was just brilliant work there. But Jan Rutter's empty net goal was just a thing of beauty. It kind of felt like something you'd see the Netmeyers try to do when they try to make a go for the goal themselves. That kind of way I felt like, but it was just so brilliant. He just lobbed it down the ice and it just went bingo in the back of the net. Absolutely amazing. Really great to Steve there. So great work there. And a lot. And just, you know, just amazing. So great to be able to get with us over the Kraken. Still waiting for our first win at Climb Pledge. We've got one more opportunity this season to do it. Yeah, so I think we kind of stunned Seattle there, because I think, you know, they come in thinking it's going to be an easy sort of matchup. I think it was their last game before going on their bye break. So they probably thought they could kind of have an easy way to go into the rest period, but nope. Okay, the last game of the month and the last game before our bye break begins was January the 31st, the next day, and overtime loss to the Ducks. Now, again, like last night with Seattle, this game was really, 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 really tight. It was a closely fought matchup, so it's probably fair and was probably rightly that it went past 60 minutes. You had a bit of a back and forth first period, which saw the Sharks manage to tie it on the power play thanks to Anthony Duclair. And then the team actually stepped up a bit. They took a lead thanks to Marco Blasic for the second night in a row scoring. But not being able to horse that lead ultimately cost them, as Anaheim found a way back. And we went to overtime. And they made it quick. Just 53 seconds into the overtime period, the Ducks got the winner. So So, tough loss there, but given how tight that game was, I think it was only right that it went to overtime, but still tough. So, the record of the month. So, I hinted at the start of the show that this record is actually a lot closer than it actually looked. It actually is. It's 5-7-2. So, just two more results went the other way, and we could have had a winning record for the first time this month in what would be a very long while. So, the Sharks are definitely making progress. They are definitely making progress. It's just the results are not showing that, and yet somehow we are still in the bottom feeders. I mean, I'm pleased to say we're no longer 32nd out of 32nd. That is now the Blackhawks. Oh yeah, there you go. Baby steps. We're no longer bottom of the league. It's now Chicago and Commanders. Yay! How's getting the first overall pick in the last year's draft not working out for you, Chicago? Commanders not delivering the goods. Oh no. Nor the hype that was told about him last year. Being the big prize for somebody in the summer. And look at where they are. Look at where Chicago are. We did not see this when Edmonton got Connor McDavid. We did not see that. Okay. We did not see this when McDavid joined the league with the Oilers. When he joined the Oilers, he made an impact straight away. And they became a fourth record with. Same with Jack Eichel. Okay, given what he was on, he did give them some light at what was a very dark tunnel. But here we are, Chicago got the big prize last year, and look where they are, 32 out of 32. Protein, get it! Come on, get in your son. But we are sadly still only one place ahead of them. But there's still a lot of time left. We're about to enter the second half of the season, so who knows? All can change. We could maybe get out of the bottom feeders by the end of it. Who knows? Right. Just need to finish up with a high point and low point of the month. The low point I'm going to do first, because it was painfully obvious. The low point had to be our game in Toronto, that Stonewall thrashing. Really, really not great. Yes. I don't need to explain about the reason why, you know why or how bad it was. High point, I'm struggling to choose between our game in Montreal or our game against the Rangers. It's hard because I could see reasons to pick both of them. But you know what? Just because of the way the Sharks managed to come together to get that comeback win, I'm going to go for the Rangers game. Just because of when we were against Montreal, we just weren't as clean as we could have been. So I'm going to say, the win over New York, that's my high point of the month. But it was only just. You've been listening to Cheer Report. The podcast made by a fan for the fans, brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. For all the latest Cheer Report bits, subscribe to my official George Hand YouTube channel. Don't forget, we always would love to hear from our fans. You can email us at cheerreportpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear you, and we could bring out your messages on the show. And while you're at it, why don't you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review? Not only does it help boost our self-esteem, but it also helps new fans find our amazing and wonderful show. Well, until next time, all that means stays, and so I'll leave you now.